our partners, new partners to the show. Now, this, I like to be prepared, and I always pat myself on the back, especially when we had that big, giant freeze and everything went to Hades, and then we had another freeze. Now I have a big old generator, and I got all this stuff. You have to be prepared for whatever life throws your way. I am of the mindset that I would rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it, because if you find yourself in the ladder, man, you're in a world of pain. When emergencies strike, the last thing that you want to worry about is how you're going to feed yourself or your family. So this is where Wise Food Storage comes in, right? Right now, you can save $50 on your four-week survival food kit. You get free shipping, and you can get all of this and check out everything that they have at preparewithdana.com. Now, you get things like a two-bucket four-week survival food kit, where it's 2,200 calories plus 64 grams of protein per day, 28-day supply. Everything is made with high-quality U.S. ingredients, which is what I like. Freeze-dried, dehydrated, it's very easy to prepare, 25-year shelf life. Now, you can get like some really good stuff, like you get tortilla soup, teriyaki rice, all kinds of good stuff. Order yours today at preparewithdana.com. Save $50 on your four-week survival food kit, plus get free shipping. Visit preparewithdana.com. That's preparewithdana.com.
But also a question of whether when you kill thousands and thousands of Palestinians and thousands of children and you bomb refugee camps, even if you are taking out some Hamas leaders, and it isn't clear to me exactly who is being taken out, but let's say you are, the reality is if you keep doing that, you will radicalize the population and another Hamas will arise. Most of the top leaders of Hamas are not even in Gaza.
Thanks so much for telling us all something that we already knew. Yeah, we knew that the top leaders weren't there in Gaza because the cowardly dogs are in Qatar is why. That's why. Because we knew that they weren't there. So we don't need Rashida Tlaib to tell us the obvious. And by the way, what a stupid, just an absolutely stupid just soundbite. I mean, I the idea that you're going to create, so Israel is responsible for creating this for some reason. I'm trying to figure out, like, there's some magical reason. Anybody know? Welcome to the show, by the way. Dana Lash here. Sorry, Premier Jayapal. But she's a Rashida Tlaib defender. They're all the same Jew-hating communists, as far as I'm concerned. They are. I mean, they are. They're all the same Jew-hating communists. So welcome to the show. As I said, Dana Lash here with you Monday. We're going to get your week started right. And all of that, get you set up. You realize that there was a ceasefire on October 6th. Can we just mention that? Here you have Premier Jayapal, who's discussing the idea that defending oneself has created, or you're with the response of defense, you're going to create more Hamas. Israel has never had to do anything, and Hamas creates itself. It's a mystery. They create themselves. Their whole entire culture, Hamas's culture, and this is the elected government of Gaza, the entire culture of Hamas is to create more Jew-hating terrorists. That's all there is to it. There was a ceasefire on October 6th. It didn't work. All of the other ceasefires that have been in place and then they were violated didn't work because one side doesn't want a ceasefire and that side's name doesn't rhyme with Shmizreel. It doesn't. You're going to create more terrorists by killing them? What is it, like a Hydra? I want them to live in fear. I want terrorists to live in fear. I want terrorists to be so afraid that they teach their children the opposite of the ideology of hatred that they have been imbibing them with up until this point. Not at any point have any of these elected officials stopped and said, maybe Hamas should stop blowing people up. Maybe they should. Maybe they should stop blowing people up. Maybe Hamas should stop, how do I say this? Not honoring the ceasefires. There was a ceasefire on October 6th. That ceasefire didn't work well. Hamas didn't follow it. Who violated it on October 6th? Oh, that's right. It was Hamas. Yes. So Premia Jayapal. And you can imagine over the weekend, things continued as you expected they would have continued. They had, I have been told, guys, I have been told that this is an insurrection. The stuff where you have, when you have protesters that show up outside of either the Capitol or the White House or anything like that. I've been told that that's, that they are insurrections, right? So they had a big riot outside of the White House, and it's a riot because they looked violent. The Secret Service was ripping down pro-Hamas banners on the fence. There were people chanting Genocide Joe. They were all outside of the White House, and they were protesting in favor of Hamas. Not in favor of releasing the hostages. Nobody said anything about nobody's ever said that. Nobody says anything about releasing the hostages. They were protesting in favor of Hamas. And they seemed very angry. I mean, they literally were protesting about Israel's, they said Israel doesn't have a right to exist. They said Israel does not have a right to exist. They had tens of thousands of them over the weekend. Screaming, Palestine will be free, accusing Biden somehow of genocide. And they were demanding a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. So they're demanding the ceasefire that they had on October 6th before their elected government carried out a terror attack on its neighbor. They were screaming Aloha Snack Bar and blank Joe Biden and all this other stuff. And from the river to the sea, which literally is about genocide of Israel. And they climbed up. Did you see some of the video? They climbed up on the fence at the White House. How were they able to do that and be out there for so long? I'm curious. How are they out there for so long and able to do that? That's kind of wild. But they looked pretty violent, screaming out there for genocide. I mean, no wonder people feel rattled and unnerved. I was looking at some of the images that they had. They had one guy put the picnic blanket scarf on Ben Franklin, and he wrapped the flag around his hand, and then they spray painted a number of different statuary, etc. Spray painted them. That's, you know, stuff that we're gonna have to. I was told, guys, this is an insurrection. I was told. Is that rule still applicable? I'm curious. That's what I was told, though. They painted their hands red, and then they put their hands all over the wall at the by the gate at the White House. You know, because they're saying that somehow the United States is complicit in all of the people that Hamas has killed for some reason. The logic defies. Audio soundbite 12, one of the speakers at the rally. Listen to this. This is the message that they had. So this isn't about freedom. This is about they just hate Jews and don't want to coexist with Jews. Listen to this.
It's real. Palestinians have a right to rebel. What that means is they have a right to fight to free their land from the river to the sea by any means necessary. And I do mean any means necessary.
Oh. Boy, he sounded tough, didn't he? Yeah. He sounds like a tough one. By the way, can we just talk about the river to the sea real quick? Because do people not realize what this means? They try to argue and say, and this is what Rashida Tlaib was trying to say. She was trying to say that it's an aspirational call for freedom. That's what she tweeted. Human rights and peaceful coexistence, not death or destruction. She's describing from the river to the sea. The original Arabic chant says, quote, from the water to the water, Palestine will remain Arab. That is that's a call for genocide. So they're lying to you about the origin of that riot chant. That's a genocidal chant. And by misrepresenting the original wording of it and trying to lie about its origin and intent, these terrorist sympathizers are lying to you. There is no gray area. You are a terrorist sympathizer or you are not a terrorist sympathizer. It is that clear. The end. These are the people who would have been very, very quiet and surreptitiously turned their neighbors into the Nazis back in pre-World War II Germany. And they know it. I can't believe it's 2023 and we still have these people. That mindset today. Just wild. Some people don't ever evolve, apparently. But that is what that chant means. The original Arabic, from the water to the water, Palestine will remain Arab. And Palestine, as you know, because we like to educate the drive-bys who come around, is a fictional term made up for a fictional country that has never existed, for a fictional people that have never existed. Nothing in antiquity supports any of this. It was given spitefully by Hadrian to the Jewish people after quelling the Second Judean Uprising, and he named it Syria Philistina after the Philistines, who were Greek and a seafaring people. Had nothing to do with Arabs, had nothing to do, there was no fictional, so it's a made up. You might as well say that you went to school at Hogwarts. It's made up. It's true. Except that, you know, Hogwarts, probably more real. They got a castle down at, Disney, the Disney people. They put a castle up. So, no, it is not, as Rashida Tlaib was trying to argue, some sort of aspirational call for freedom. Now, in the meantime, you had Antony Blinken, who seemed desperate. I just didn't get a lot of confidence from this AP piece. Here's the headline. It says, Blinken wraps up frantic Mideast tour with tepid, if any, support for pauses. I'm so tired of this stupid wordplay. Pauses in Gaza fighting. Pauses. Because they don't want to tell you outright that it's, you know, they don't want to say, well, it's, you know, it's a ceasefire. Because ceasefire is very unpopular with, you know, people who don't want to be murdered and not be able to defend themselves. But if he calls it, but the left is upset. They want him to say ceasefire and they want him to enforce it. So he was in Ankara, in Turkey's capital. He met with the foreign minister there. He was in Israel. He was in Jordan. He was in West Bank. I love how the Associated Press, the reporter whose parents are probably first cousins, Matthew Lee is his name, over at the Associated Press, he wrote this sentence, and it actually went through their editorial process at said Associated Press. He wrote the phrase, quote, the occupied West Bank. Occupy your mom, Matthew Lee, because honestly, that's an also stupid made up term, just like, quote unquote, assault weapon is a made up term. All of that, just like Palestine's a made up term. All of it's made up. So it's not occupied. To Cyprus, to Iraq, building support for the administration. All of this is a work in progress. Blinken didn't have a lot of support. Blinken did not have a lot of support. This administration has put itself in a very interesting position because they desperately want to be lapdogs for Iran. I have no idea why. I don't know. The United States, under Republican administrations, you know, you have an ally over there in the Middle East, Israel. You have an ally. And then you have some Middle Eastern nations, some of whom are better geopolitical partners than others. And I get it because there are people that exist out there and they think that, you know, we should have a litmus test of perfection when it comes to determining who, which country can be a good geopolitical partner for the United States. In geopolitics, you got to choose the lesser of all of the bad options, the lesser bad of all the bad options. And Iran's one of the worst. We don't want to partner with Iran. And there are other countries out there, like, for instance, in Saudi Arabia, they've been changing some stuff over there. It's not the United States. Not every country is going to be like the United States. I love all of these, you know, neocon, bleeding heart moderates that think that ultimately that you can somehow overturn centuries of culture, and some places just are not going to be republics, and implement that there. But you have to have good partners. You can't have Iran be the power in the Middle East. And so previous administrations have leaned towards Saudi Arabia. I don't know why this administration's obsessed with making Iran happy. And it's like Biden's continuing Obama on that. Does he have a foreign policy idea of his own? I'm not quite sure. We have more on the way. Some of the other stuff that we have coming up to throw at you. In Nashville, apparently the manifesto has been somewhat released. We'll talk specifically about the manifesto because it's exactly what you thought it was going to be. We're going to get into that. We also have the split inside the Democrat Party because of Hamas's war on Israel. We have all of that. We got some culture for you. We got all kinds of stuff. Our partners over at Headrest Safe. This is a great Christmas gift. It's a great gift for yourself now. Buy one for yourself. And then, you know, somebody else, maybe they get a great Christmas gift for them. Because this provides invisible protection. Headrest Safe is a one-of-a-kind in-vehicle safe. It's award-winning. The Concealed Carry Magazine gave it their editor's choice for innovation of best-in-class vehicle safes. And, you know, I know a lot of, I get it. There's a lot of vehicle safes out there. It attaches, you know, down in to the lower console or this or that. This, though, is absolutely undetectable. There's no way people are going to find what this is. It's the passenger side, so it ensures no safety hazards for drivers. And it's absolutely seamless. They blend it seamlessly to your car's interior. They can match over 80% of cloth and pleather/leather of cars sold right here in the U.S. And it provides safe, secure storage. You know, if you're going to a game, you can't bring your gun in. You need a dependable safe, or you have valuables or medicine, whatever it is. You can get to your items in 2.5 seconds thanks to a magnetic access door and a user-friendly biometric fingerprint reader. Nobody else can. It's also comes equipped with a backup keypad and a hard key. Locks into your seat to prevent unauthorized removal. And like I said, you can choose from all kinds of colors and materials. And it locks very securely in place, replaces your existing headrest with a deployable toggle bolt. I'm telling you, nobody knows. They will not know. Guaranteed peace of mind, backed by 100% money back guarantee. The Headrest Safe caters to anybody seeking secure and accessible in-vehicle storage. See it for yourself at theheadrestsafe.com and use code Dana for an exclusive $50 off. That's theheadrestsafe.com, code Dana for $50 off. The Headrest Safe, transforming the way we protect our valuables and vehicles with 100% money back guarantee.
Have you been thinking about your home as an investment this whole time? If it's just another bill for you, do it the right way. If you've been stressed about paying back the massive loan you took out for it, it's not certain you'll sell it for more than what you paid for it. Don't become mortgage poor. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
You know the song that popped into my head, right, when I read this headline? Like, I mean, I read right towards the end of it, and I had that, what is it, Big and Rich song? Play chicken with the train. Drunk grizzlies keep getting hit by trains in Montana. I mean, I am not making this up, y'all. This is since 1980. 63 grizzlies have been hit by trains near Glacier National Park. Now, here's the problem. You have rail cars that spill fermented grain, and the grizzlies go to town, and they literally get drunk on fermented grain. The grizzlies. It is a treacherous stretch of rail lining near Glacier National Park in Montana. And since 1980, 63 bears have been killed along a stretch of rail that goes over the Marias Pass and Great Bear Wilderness, according to multiple reports from state and federal wildlife agencies. They say the worst year on record was 2019. 8 were killed by trains. So far, 3 have been killed this year. And they say that many of them, it's kind of like a drunken attempt to outrun the trains. They go there and they eat the fermented grain. They get drunk. They see a train coming. They're like, hoo hoo, or whatever a bear does. Oh, there's a bear to run, bear noises. And then, you know, they get hit. It sucks. I mean, sidebar, can you make a rug out of them? Are they still like enough of an appease to, you know, at least use some of that fur? I'm just asking. Gal Gadot plans a Hollywood screening of IDF footage depicting Hamas's atrocities. And she's the Israeli actress who served her time, and she was 2 years in IDF. She said she's making efforts to illuminate the ongoing conflict by organizing a screening of a 47-minute video provided by the IDF. It's a damn, and so just you know, the footage is actually from terrorists' own body cameras. So it's a pretty damning record of the stuff that they did on October 7th. You know, the day after the ceasefire that they violated on October 6th. So the Oscar-winning director who spearheaded the initiative said that her and her husband, Yaron Varsano, helped make it possible. They don't have the dates yet, but good for them on doing that. John Voight disagrees with his daughter Angelina Jolie's post on Instagram regarding Israel. He said that she wants to, it's not a mass prison, that she wants to, that this is all, they're turning into a mass grave because of Hamas. And he said that he was disappointed that apparently she has no understanding of the glory of God. I know John Voight. He's an awesome dude. I just hate seeing like this stuff like this play out. Stick with us. All right. So there's a movie out. If you are looking for something to view this weekend, or looking, you want to go to the theater, or you want to go see a great film. There's a new film out from the studio that brought you The Sound of Freedom and The Chosen. And these are films that were really, really well done. One of my biggest criticisms of so many films that kind of originate on the right or in the faith-based community is that it seems like production value was always secondary. the Angel Studios really, really focuses on just top-notch production, and they really do great films. I mean, they just look, you know, really beautiful, and they're really well done. And their next one, After Death, which is in theaters now, and you can purchase your tickets online at angel.com/Dana. It explores the mystery of what happens, you know, what could happen after we die. And it looks at the perspective, looks at it from the perspective of individuals who have gone through this, who had a situation where they, you know, they were flatlined, their heart stopped beating, and they went, you know, to the realm beyond. And it talks about their experiences, first person accounts, but they also incorporate, unlike anybody else, very careful research. So it's the perfect marriage of scientific knowledge and philosophy and faith to paint a fascinating picture of what life could be like in the next realm. To find a theater near you and to purchase tickets online, you can go to angel.com/Dana, and you can also pay it forward. You know, you can purchase a ticket from someone else. So if you're someone that would love to go see it, but you know, times are tough and you can't really swing tickets, you can actually go, and generous fans have paid it forward for you, and you can get a free ticket at angel.com/Dana. So leave your preconceptions at the door. Prepare for a never before seen glimpse into what the next life could entail. And After Death in theaters now. Get your tickets today. Pay it forward. Angel.com/Dana. That's angel.com/Dana. After Death, the end is only the beginning. PG-13.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At the same time, it was very important to send a very clear message to anyone who might seek to take advantage of the conflict in Gaza to threaten our personnel here or anywhere else in the region. Don't do it.
I'm sorry, what?
Don't do it, Dan.
That's like watered down Nike. Don't do it. Biden, don't do it. Oh my gosh. Republicans, why are you not running with that on a shirt?
I know.
And instead of the swoosh, it's like a fart dust, fart cloud. Why is that? These are free, man. The other stuff I'm going to charge y'all for. I'm going to charge you, charge that RNC for. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lasher with you. Woo boy. Yeah, my message to these peoples, just don't. Biden, don't do it. What is that supposed to do? Now, I don't know if they are. Now, hear me out. Hear me out. I don't know if they're trying to carry. What is the phrase? Walk softly, carry a big stick.
Yes.
Is that kind of what they're trying to do? Because so apparently, you know, this was a rare thing. I don't know if you guys saw this news over the weekend. This, I'm going to get the date because it's, yeah, so this is just yesterday when this news was announced. This is a very rare thing for the military to announce. So we moved a guided missile submarine, nuclear powered, into the Middle East. They never do that. They don't, CENTCOM doesn't go out there and be like, guys, by the way, our stuff is getting moved here to the Middle East. It's where it is. We don't ever do that. So it was an Ohio-class sub entering its area of responsibility. That's a terrifying phrase. I mean, for people who aren't us, right? Yes, we've moved all of our badass baddie weapons into an area of responsibility. Oh, you have you? Mm-hmm, yes. I've moved my fist into an area of responsibility. I'm going to start saying that all the time now. Man, I wish I knew that phrase when I was younger with my kids, because I... when they were little bitty and I could whoop them. I mean, when they were bad, not just like me randomly. What kind of person do you think I am? I'm going to move my hand into an area of responsibility here if you don't take it. So they had a social media post. Everything is stupid. Everything is on social media. I get it. That's how all the people in the Matrix get everything. You know, social media is the Matrix. You know this, right? I hope you all realize this. You're already in the Matrix. Social media is the Matrix. You don't have to be in a pot of goo hooked up to something like a Dyson vacuum and not be in like meat space and think that digital is real. You are already in the Matrix. Just FYI. So anyway, rare announcement. Nuclear powered sub arrived in the Middle East. They said it's a message of deterrence. A message of deterrence directed at regional adversaries. It's a big baddie. And they said that I know that all my Navy friends love it when I describe this. It's great. They posted the announcement. It's in the it went through the Suez Canal. And they didn't it's just we have four Ohio class guided missile subs or SSGNs, which are former ballistic missile subs converted to fire Tomahawk cruise missiles rather than the nuke tip ballistic missiles. They each come with 154 Tomahawk cruise missiles. That's standard capacity, guys. Yep. Standard capacity, 154 Tomahawk cruise missiles. 50% more than the U.S. guided missile destroyers pack, four times what the U.S. Navy's newest attack subs have. And they also carry up to 1,000-pound high-explosive warhead. So I love the guy, how he was describing it to the press. U.S. Pacific Command's Joint Intel Center told the press that he said, SSGNs can deliver a lot of firepower very rapidly. You're going to incinerate quickly. So we've moved it into this area. And we got a whole bunch of assets. We got two carrier strike groups. What do we got? Another big warship, I think, that the brass is on. I think we got the Vice Admiral or something like that on one of these ships out there. We got a lot of stuff. That's what you need to know. So I'm just... And they announced this. They announced this, that this was happening. You know that they announced it because they want Iran to see that we're moving stuff in. Now, here's something to note. Iran, historically, has never just... They don't just respond to language. I'm not saying, guys, for all the people out there, and I've been a neocon before, or an anti-neocon, since before the anti-neocon knew that how to abuse the phrase and use it inaccurately. It's not the same thing. This is peace through strength. Because Iran has never, ever, you can't just say, uh-uh, to Iran. They don't care. You have to actually basically have your fist just a second from their head before they believe that you really mean it when you say, don't do it. So what I'm saying is this their dippy way of walking softly and carrying a big stick? The messaging still is stupid. I don't know if they think that's cool. Don't. Really? Steve is getting this for me because I told this is not the way that I would have done it. So one of my favorite movies, I have several. They're all very highbrow, as you can imagine. Actually, one of them is. One of them is Death Proof from Quentin Tarantino, which is one of the best chick flicks ever made. It's Death Proof. It's a chick flick all the way. It's amazing. Has everything you want. And I also love Tropic Thunder. And so... My idea, if I were Anthony Blinken, or if I were messaging and crafting messaging for the administration, I would channel Les Grossman, the notorious agent from Tropic Thunder. Now, let me just set the stage. You remember in Tropic Thunder, Tug Speedman had been captured by Flaming Dragon, the terrorist group in the Southeast Asia. And Matthew McConaughey was his agent. And he's like, they got this guy. They had no idea who they were dealing with. They thought it was a competing agency. Les Grossman didn't care. He was too busy talking about the Goody Room and a G5. He didn't care. So Les Grossman had it already. Here you got McConaughey's character in Les Grossman's office. Les Grossman's this big Hollywood, you know, it played by Tom Cruise brilliantly, by the way. It was one of the funniest roles I've ever seen anybody in. This is just how I would handle the messaging on this. A la Les Grossman. Listen.
Les Grossman, who is this?
This is Flaming Dragon!
Okay, Flaming Dragon. Face. First, take a big step back and literally
your own face!
Now, I don't know what kind of pan-Pacific bullshit power play you're trying to pull here, but Asia Jack is my territory. So whatever you're thinking, you better think again. Otherwise, I'm going to have to head down there, and I will rain down on a godly firestorm upon you. You're going to have to call the United Nations and get a binding resolution to keep me from destroying you. I am talking scorched earth, motherfucker. I will massacre you. I will fuck you up.
And there you have it. That should be the response. And then just put up, as this message is being conveyed from the podium, then just have pictures of our sub going through the Suez. have all the pictures of our tools of warfare. You know, you can have short stack down in North Korea parade the five tanks he's got. I mean, I love that they got tanks. I mean, you're shut up. Do you even have fuel to run them? Can you get from Pyongyang to where you need to go? I don't think so. And in Russia, they have like a bunch of falling apart equipment. No. We don't need to have parades. We just got pictures. Our stuff isn't in the square. Our stuff is out in the world. That's where our stuff is. Because we got peace through strength. By God, we didn't want to be world's police. We don't want to be world's police. We're not nation builders. But here's the message. We want to be left alone as Americans. And we want you to leave our allies alone. Because we understand that if you compromise our allies and you steamroll them over, much like Hitler did in Europe, then one day you could be trying to rain hell down upon us. And that we just cannot abide. Now, if you disagree, that's just like your opinion, man, to quote the great Jeff Lebowski, but you're wrong. No, this is peace through strength. We have these things to want to not use them. But if the bear is poked and we have to use these things, oh my gosh, we will literally just incinerate you. I don't care how many generations it needs to go deep in order for you to never try to do this to people again. In order for never again to mean something, it has to be felt. So that's how I look at it. That's what have been my message. But Kane, I just don't think that these stuffed shirts in D.C. would appreciate the Les Grossman inspiration. Mm-mm. No. You know, and then showing pictures of all our boats and stuff. You know.
They have stuffing where their spines should be.
Exactly. Still one of the greatest scenes. A real G5. Welcome to the goody room. That's such a great movie. All right. So Anthony Blinken, in the meantime, he's doesn't sound very strong. He's kind of desperate over there in the Middle East. We got our Ohio class nuclear sub over there. So we're taking precautions. We're showing that, look, we don't want this to get out of control. So let's not anybody get froggy. Let's not get froggy. We have a few other things that we're going to hit, too. Let me tell you what else we have coming up. Our very good friend Stephen Yates is going to be joining us later on in the program. We also needed to touch on the division inside the Democrat Party. I get it that a lot of Democrats and their operatives who pretend to be influencers on the right, let's be real, they very much want you to focus on all of the division within the right, factions of the right. But have you seen what's happening on the left? Like the right is divided on basically personality. That's what it is. I mean, it's not policy. People are divided on the right because of personality, not at all because of policy. It wouldn't be a question if it was policy. And then on the left, they're divided by who are the Nazis and who aren't. So I feel like no matter what the division is on the right, we're in a better place, right? You know, I feel really good about that. So we're going to touch on that. We got a whole bunch of other stuff to hit on as well. Our partners at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country, and they have been responsible in making a lot of victories happen for a lot of local areas, whether it's school boards, whether it's state races, or even some congressional races as well. Patriot Mobile exists not only to provide you with great customer service and great cell phone service and great coverage, because I've told you before, they offer dependable nationwide coverage in all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without funding the communist left. But when you switch to, you can keep your phone, keep your number, upgrade. The choice is yours. They have plans tailor-made for whatever it is that you need. They have 100% US-based customer service team. They make it easy to switch. Free activation using code Dana. So visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and be sure to mention offer code Dana to get that free activation. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Make the switch today.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
You know, I have to say, speaking of Joe Biden, how nice would it be, by the way, to have a president of the United States to have their kids bring home homework to the White House instead of cocaine? Okay?
I like that. Yes. Instead of cocaine. I hope we didn't give out cocaine. Jiminy Christmas. Did anyone check and see what they were put? I just now thought of this. Do we know what he and Jill were putting in the, Jill Biden were putting in the buckets at the Halloween?
Hope it wasn't powdered donuts.
Jeez. Hunter comes running out in his skivvies. Wait a minute, Dad. It's baby Hunter. Good grief. Welcome back to the program. I got a quick question. I want you to think about this because we got a lot more to talk about next hour. So I just so I can have this clear in my mind. So over the weekend, you had all of these people, these pro-Hamas folks, and I saw a lot of photo and video. They were chanting, blink the Jews. In addition to the other genocide, the genocidal chant of From the River to the Sea. So they were cheering about blanking the Jews. They were carrying signs that they, on which they had printed swastikas. The only thing that was missing from them was the torches. And the people who said, and I get it, they went after the weak sauces that showed up in Charlotte with their little Home Depot torches. The same media that went after those people. The same media that said if you make the long-held okay sign with your hand that was racist. The same media that pushed all of that hasn't blinked at what we saw over the weekend. Do I understand that correctly? So if you are, so this is how it's covered. If you go to a protest in the nation's capital and you carry a literal swastika sign while screaming how much you hate the Jews and how Israel shouldn't exist, if you're on the left, it's okay. Yes. Not saying that people on the right did that. If you make the okay sign, if you just do this, yes, that's considered racism. What?
It's almost like a double standard.
It's almost like all of the left's idea of moral code that they tried to drum in everyone's head doesn't work because it's inconsistent and never made sense anyway. Mm-hmm. It's like the Winchester House of Reason. We're just going to just make up stuff, stairway arguments that go nowhere, answers that have no, or questions that have no answers. It's the Winchester House of Reason. That's exactly what it is. I mean, they were literally at the gate of the White House. Nothing. Nobody's saying nothing. Leaving their horrible signs, defacing the White House gate, all of this stuff. That is pretty amazing. So that's just so you know exactly the context. I don't know. I think Washington Post, I was looking. They said that, yeah, they had made one arrest, a spray painting. They said they mentioned the red handprints meant to symbolize blood, that they've defaced the White House perimeter. Free Palestine, the fictional country, was spray painted onto a statue at Lafayette Park, man. You had the left that tried to bomb a church there. So they set it on fire. And then now this. But that's not an insurrection. Just FYI. Really interesting. We have a lot more on the way. Our second hour coming up. And you don't want to miss it. Stick with us more back after this. Our partners over at Kel-Tec, the Sub-2K. This thing is so cool. Great Florida-based company. Have been longtime partners with this program. And I got a lot of Kel-Tec stuff. And the They have a lot of, like I said, a lot of really good. They have the sub-2K. They also have the PMR-30 and the CMR-30. The CMR-30, the carbine, is, I think, I love the PMR-30. It's one of my favorite all-around reliable Kel-Tec weapons. And if you're recoil shy, PMR-30 is great for personal home defense. But I like it. I mean, it's a great 22. I like the PMR-30 because when I am taking other people to the range or when my kids were coming up, this was... And training with firearms and handguns, the PMR-30 was great for target acquisition. It's great for, you know, all day, all range day plinking. It's good for backpacking, camping, boating, all that good stuff. 30 round, 22 magnum capacity. You also have fiber optic front and rear sight. You got excellent target acquisition, integrated accessory rail for mounting a light. I just love this. I love this. And the CMR-30 is no different. Love the CMR-30 as well. You can find, and that's the PMR-30's big brother, by the way. It's just a ballistic advantage. You can learn more about the PMR-30 at KelTecWeapons.com. Follow them on social media as well. KelTecWeapons.com, K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Tell them that Dana sent you.
Is liberated. Number three, it is the opportunity for the U.S. to be the peacemaker.
I'm sure
number
you're
one,
concerned to about that tax revenue.
Designate.
Though.
Let me.
Do you want to clear the air and condemn
the PLO? De-designate the PLO from the terrorist list in the U.S. Congress. Your Secretary of State just shake the hand of the head of the President of the PLO after 30 years of signing the Oslo Accords, after 30 years of committing to international law and negotiations. The U.S. should do that. The U.S. should recognize the state of Palestine and allow us to be a full member in the UN. And the U.S. must immediately stop vetoing our yes. attempts at accountability
These
in the ICC.
These are
This doesn't make sense. So this is first. This is Face the Nation, and this was the Palestinian ambassador to the UK, Hussam Zumlot, who was being quizzed as to why they haven't condemned Hamas, and he said, "No. The U.S. has to be the peacemaker and recognize the quote-unquote Palestinian state." What? Welcome back to the program. First off, top of the second hour with you, Dana Lash here. He responded, "No, I don't want to clear the record." When he was pressed on and asked if he wanted to clear the air and specifically condemn Hamas and its attack, Zumlot responded, no, I don't want to clear the record. And then they're trying to do wordplay. He's like, he says, no, the PA is not represents the people. That's the PLO, the organization. And he goes, I represented a PLO in Washington and I represented in England. The PA does not have external arms and blah, blah. Oh my gosh, this is all such, it's semantics at this point because they have the same exact members. Shut up. This is so stupid. That's him trying to sidestep and dodge accountability. I mean, it's so goofy. And they recognize that people don't know all of this. They are counting on it. And because not everybody has the, you know, good heavens. They understand it. Now the PLO is what is recognized. And they say, oh, no, we're very different. I mean, one of them has recognition internationally, et cetera, et cetera. But he mentioned the Oslo Accords there, and that's when they were recognizing the authority of each group to be in these specific territories. But they have the same thing. They have like the same members. They have the same thing. And his claim in this, and I'm pulling this up from the Hill, his claim further, he was saying that, well, the United States has to recognize, be the peacemaker and recognize our state. Well, that's not the United States' responsibility. It's not their responsibility to do, number one. And number two, there is no state. You're talking about conjuring up something out of the ether and you're trying to claim antiquity on it as a way to justify your anti-Jew, your Jew hatred. That's what it is. That's all it is. My friend Dave Burge made a very interesting point, too, about the language. And I was thinking about this just then. And he was talking about, he's Iowa Hawk on Twitter. He was talking about anti-Semitism and saying that it seems almost like a powdery, purposefully vague phrase, anti-Semitism. He had said that anti-Semitism is, you know, the maybe how you would describe people who dislike Jewish people at the country club. Anti-Semitism is, you know, maybe perhaps how you would describe anti-Jewish people and their feelings on that. How you would describe that, like, you know, in different, you know, in the old school universities. Not like what we're seeing here. Like, for instance, this came out of Indianapolis over the weekend. A woman, police there arrested a woman who they labeled a terrorist after she drove her car into a building that she thought was a Jewish school. Now, I have more on this, but hang on, because there's a twist. Ruba, lots of consonants, 34, was arrested on a preliminary charge of criminal recklessness. Police were called to the building around 11:30 p.m. on Friday to investigate a hate crime. She told officers she was watching coverage of the Hamas war in Israel, decided to plan an attack on the building because she was offended by the Israeli symbol on the front of the building. She passed by it a couple of times, called it the Israel school. She made reference to police, to her quote, people back in Palestine. And she says, yes, I did it. I did it on purpose. Now, I'm going to tell you the rest of the story here in a minute because the twist is coming. But that seems like, yes, you have anti-Semitism and then you just have literally you hate Jews. I'm not saying that they're not the same thing. What I'm saying is I feel like it kind of masks just how insane the rage is. Now, this woman, by the way, this is where it gets even doubly interesting. She targeted the school because of the symbol. She said the Hebrew Israelite symbol that was on the front of the building. The building was a building for Black Hebrew Israelites, a notorious anti-Semitic group. Now, if you're unfamiliar with who the Black Hebrew Israelites are, the last time they were in the press was when they were attacking the Covington kids in D.C. That was the group that was arguing and targeted the Covington school kids there in D.C. as they waited where all tour groups wait at the Capitol, right there in the mall by the Lincoln Memorial, for the buses to pick them up. She foobarred her own hate crime because she's a moron, much like I would imagine most Jew haters are, because they hate people for just simply what they believe. Is that not crazy? She didn't even know. She's like, I see the Star of David. I'm going to roll my car into it. It was the Black Hebrews. They don't like Jewish people. I mean, I've been to, you go to D.C. and you're going to see a group from that group protesting. And I've seen some signs myself personally. I've seen some things. I'm just like, oh my gosh. But they believe that they are the OG Jews and that everybody else are imposters. That's what they believe. They think that they are actually like, they're the unappreciated tribe. That's the belief set. I'm just saying that she literally targeted it because she thought it was Jewish, but she's a moron. You know, I mean, when you look at the people she likes, Hamas, and how they blow up their own people because they can't figure out rockets. Yeah, I mean, you know, it makes sense. But it just seems like when you talk about that, you know, the anti-Semitism aspect, it does seem like, that's hatred. That's absolute hatred. Now, part of switching gears to other things just targeted strictly because of their faith, and I mentioned the covenant, the kids that were in D.C. So 8 months ago, you had a trans activist storm into the Covenant Christian School, murdering six people, including small children, and remember, she wanted to be a dude, right? That's because I think people were confused by the initial reporting and they kept asking me if I was doing the pronoun thing. And I'm like, let me explain this one last time. She is a chick who wants to be a dude and wants to be called he anyway. So they never, I don't know why they didn't, they never wanted to release the manifesto. And then the excuse for not releasing the manifesto that they gave, and this was just chef's kiss of idiocy here, when someone filed a FOIA request and then had to engage in litigation to get them to release it, they then claimed that they can't release items that are pending litigation. So they said, oh, because someone sued us to try to get us to release this, we can't release stuff that's involved in litigation. So now you just made it where we can't release it. That was literally the excuse they gave. So the manifesto, the Nashville Manifesto, it is exactly like what you thought it would be. And there's some photos of it that are circulating online. It is exactly like what you would thought it would be. She called it Death Day. She wrote, today is the day that the day has finally come. Well, duh. She is a moron. She went into how she was excited to do it. And she says, I'm ready. I hope my victims aren't. She writes in her, it's a notebook, and she writes in there, I really hope that I have a high death count. She adds that she's ready to die. And she says, kill those kids, those crackers, going to private fancy schools with their fancy khakis and sports, with their daddy's Mustangs and convertibles. Blank you, little blanks. I wish to shoot you because she slurs them, and your mop of yellow hair. She says she wants to kill you, little crackers. A bunch of little slurs with your white privilege. Blank you, slur. Yeah. So she, the trans activist, committed a hate crime. I think all crimes are hate crimes, but I'm going to be forced to use the left's language, there it is. Wow. So it wasn't about the gun. She was a trans terrorist. She was a trans terrorist. End of. Man alive. I mean, this is something else. But nobody in the media is talking about this now. Notice how nobody in the media, they dropped the story entirely of the main killer. Because everything in there, nobody's asking questions anymore. All the people who claim that they care so much about saving lives, why the hell are any of these people not asking why all the laws they champion didn't work? Why? I got some thoughts. We got headlines, too, coming up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so first up, this is a real story. There's a demand for unvaccinated sperm. Women are turning to shady Facebook groups looking for donors who did not get the shot.
Like, trust me, bro, I didn't get the shot.
I guess it's like couples that are looking to have kids or I don't know. They said that they're women from both the U.S. and U.K., young professionals, all kinds of stuff. First off, make sure you're married. that because they're... Doesn't that say a lot? That says a lot. What in the world? I don't know if I want to... Can we just have Smod come? An author came out as a transgender man after her wife... What came out... After her husband came out as a trans woman.
Confusing.
So it's a husband and wife that swapped genders. And they have a son who is now a daughter. And they also have a relationship with another trans couple. It's like doing algebra. And I just have to say, every single one of these people are heinously ugly as members of the opposite sex. Like, to the nth degree. They are so not attractive. Anyway... I can't believe that's a headline today, but it is. Okay, so I'm going to get a couple of others that we had that I didn't get to last time as well. SAG-AFTRA is reviewing the studio's last, best, and final offer. They had a big CEO meeting today. Now, you know Zuckerberg's been training for apparently an MMA fight. Well, he had a torn ACL, and he's had to undergo surgery for it. He was training for an MMA competition. He revealed on Friday that he underwent surgery and he's on the road to recovery. This is so weird. This is like so weird that he's doing this. But, you know, I don't know. The mortgage market is so bad right now. Mortgage lenders are demanding laid off workers return their bonuses. That's how bad things are. I know. This also is a real headline. Alabama mayor and a very bad Baptist pastor, F.L. Bubba Copeland, shot himself after he was outed for dressing as a transgender curvy girl named Brittany, spelled with three I's, Blair, and uploading photos a la Hunter Biden. Yeah. I have no... Why are all of the worst headlines in this segment? All of them, the worst headlines ever. Death by bowling ball. This is from the Bronx. This is also really a horrible way to go, man. A 44-year-old man was killed by his younger brother with a bowling ball in an apartment complex. NYPD is investigating a violent death that took place at the Concourse Village Apartments. A 44-year-old man was found dead in a trash bag. They said that his younger brother, 41, Jason, killed him using a bowling ball. So you know how that was done. That was a really rough way to go. The younger brother was has not been arraigned yet, but he's facing charges of murder and manslaughter. People say that who live in the building say they're shocked. They said it's been pretty peaceful here. They don't really, the reason that it was found, he stuffed his brother's body in a bag and left it under the bed. And the father of two of the brothers, he was contacted apparently about the smell. That's so heinous. I can't. We got a lot more on the way. Is this going to be subpoena week for the Biden family? We'll talk about that and more. Stick with us.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
That what Hamas did was horrific, and there's no justification for it. And what is also true is that the occupation and what's happening to Palestinians is unbearable. And what is also true is that there is a history.
Why is he talking so slow and everything is a question? Beavis and Butthead did a segment on this. They had a whole episode where they had influencers showing off the inside of their house, and Beavis is like, why is everything a question? Hello? Welcome to my house. Welcome back to the show. Tina Lash here with you. Bottom of the second hour. And you can listen, like, as you always know, coast to coast. You can also watch the simulcast, Channel 347, DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook. This was, the president was talking about how he says that what Hamas did was horrific and there's no justification in his audio soundbite, which is insane. He says in this soundbite, do we have this one? He says in this soundbite, and this was the big one that was like apparently like going all over the internet, saying that he said that you have to admit we're all complicit. That's what he said later on in the soundbite. Like right after that, he says you have to admit all of us are complicit. What? Kane, did you know you're complicit in all that?
I had no clue.
You didn't know you were complicit in Hamas?
No idea.
How?
I don't know how.
Wait, is he talking about when he greenlit giving money to Iran and then Iran gave all of that funding to Hamas? Mm-hmm. Just asking questions, you know. I have very important questions to ask. He says that first he plays into the occupation. He didn't say anything when October 7th first happened. And remember, there was a ceasefire on October 6th. When October 7th happened, he said nothing for like a week. Nothing. Said nothing about the horrors. He said nothing about the hostages. He said nothing. And some people were even asking why he hadn't said anything, given that A, he's, you know, previous president, and B, he was so instrumental in this, I guess, empowerment of Hamas by Iran. Yeah, listen to what he says here.
And so if you want to solve the problem, then you have to take in the whole truth. And you then have to admit nobody's hands are clean, that all of us are complicit to some degree.
How?
I look at this and I think back, what could
How
I
are
have
we
done?
All complicit? You know what he could have done? He could have not have built up Iran. He and Valerie Jarrett, he could have not built up Iran. He could have not sent, he could have not tried to allow them to keep building their weaponry, et cetera, et cetera. He could have made, you know, he could have made sure that, I mean, that's his complicity in this. And as Kane noted, Biden could not have given Iran access to that $6 billion in sanctioned oil cash. You know, he could have done that. This, we're not all, I don't understand the blaming this. What is it? We don't know. We, none of us did this. He had this big essay. He had this editorial that he put out at the end of last month. And he hates Israel. Obama does not like Israel. And this is evident in how he pushed, what policy he pushed when he was president and what he says and doesn't say after. And he always lecture, he's, I mean, they're lecturing Israel about what Israel shouldn't and shouldn't, should and should not do concerning saving Israeli lives after they were attacked by Hamas. They have not said a damn thing to Hamas. None of them have said it. They haven't said anything to Hamas after Hamas was found to have put babies in ovens. They haven't said anything about Hamas after Hamas raped young girls to the point where they broke their pelvic bones. He hasn't said anything about Hamas. He or none of his Democrat pro-Hamas Nazi cohorts. They haven't said anything about the raping and killing of women, kidnapping of children, beheading of babies. These are all documented. There's video and photographic evidence, and there's bodies and ash and blood and grief. They haven't said anything about any of these atrocities that Hamas has committed. But by God, if Israel says, oh, enough is enough, never again is now, and puts an end to it. Oh, my goodness. In my town this weekend, we have a, I love the way our town's laid out. I live in a county that is the last largest red urban county in the country. The last large urban red county. And it is considered to be the most, one of the most conservative parts of Texas, if not the most conservative part of Texas. And there's been a huge fight in this county. This is where the school board fight kicked off, all of that. And there's been a huge fight. NBC has been involved, all this. A lot of outside money coming in. Everything from school board races to state races to judge races, county commissioner. I mean, it's, everything's a fight. And so we had church yesterday, and then after church, we go and always get brunch. I never started getting brunch until I literally turned 35. Then I was like, okay, it's brunch. Now I'm going to just start doing brunch. I never had brunch before I was 35. Do you know that? I was like, where have I been all my life with the brunch? And drove through our town square. And in our town square, in front of our city hall, is this gorgeous fountain. And there was, I noticed there was a demonstration there. And I saw the Israeli flag. And then I saw our U.S. flag. And I thought, let's pull in here. Because I saw some red balloons. And we parked and walked in. And I saw some of our police out already, just kind of keeping the peace. And there were empty chairs. And the leaflets. You know, the artists that put all of this together originally. All of these leaflets of every single hostage that was kidnapped on October 7th were on the back of these chairs, and they were affixed to some of the park benches. And the ones in which there were teddy bears, too, tied to the kids, they were literally like two-year-olds that were kidnapped and are still missing. Babies that were just taken, ripped away from their mothers and are still missing. Entire families. There was a little family of three little girls. And that's where the youngest one of that group was. There was a three-year-old. There was like a three-year-old, a four-year-old, and I think a six-year-old kidnapped. A lot of them, a lot of the kids, their parents are already dead. And some of them, it's just the wife. Just horrific. And all they did was they just put this up. They just put this demonstration together just to let people know this is exactly what this number looks like. And this is who these people were. Now, you've seen these flyers being ripped off of telephone poles in New York, being ripped down on different college campuses. And they were members of the Jewish community in my town that were here. And they were, you know, we were talking to folks and getting to know people. And they are on the corner because the park is in the middle. It's kind of like Back to the Future, like the town from the 1950s. It's laid out very similarly. So you have these street front retail spots that face this park all around in a corner. And then you have the boulevard on one end, City Hall on the other end. And then on either side, you have retail. And on one of the corners by the Starbucks was a group of young women. One of them was a mom, and they just had bring home the hostages. They were just raising awareness. I mean, it was very, very non-confrontational, very non-aggressive. And they were very nice. And there were four instances at this event yesterday in my town. In my town, in a suburban Fort Worth, because we're Fort Worth, not Dallas, in a suburban Fort Worth town, there was a guy who was driving a Mercedes-Benz who rolled down his window and screamed at them on video, "Blank the Jews, all Jews die." Again, in a town square in a suburban Fort Worth area. There was another one. Someone had said, they were saying free Palestine, and then they were screaming from the river to the sea. Drove by. There were two college-age pro-Hamas students who tried to engage the young women and try to be very aggressive. And they did not succeed in getting that aggression mirrored. And then, you know, there was another instance where someone else drove by and said, "Blank the Jews, put them in an oven." I mean, it was four instances just from when we had gotten, we were there maybe an hour, maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes, just talking with folks. And just in that time, four instances happened. And I heard one of them, and I could not believe that that's what I was hearing. Maybe I am just fortunate in that I didn't grow up around that kind of hatred. And if you haven't grown up around that kind of hatred, when you hear it, it is arresting. I mean, it is like seeing a damn Martian. It is weird. So they had a couple of police officers out and everybody just keeping the peace. But that in my suburban town, that in the very idyllic town square, that you would have a middle-aged man driving his Mercedes, his license plate visible to all, who screams something like that on video to an entire busy Sunday afternoon town square. It was a beautiful day yesterday. It was like in the low 70s. Is appalling to me and shocking. You would think that modernity would have breeded that sort of hatred and ignorance out, but it hasn't. Apathy has fostered it and has allowed it to grow. But it's unbelievable. And like I said, there's no gray area. It's one thing if you dislike the Israeli government and you dislike how Netanyahu has done things. I mean, there are actual Israelis who disagree with Netanyahu on things. That's one thing entirely. It's totally different. It's entirely different from thinking that an entire group of people have no right to exist. Do you realize that's what this is a question of? Existence. It is shocking. And I just think, how in the hell is this alive today still? How? Humans are horrible. I took a picture. I had it up one up on Instagram. I did disable comments on it because I was not in a mood and I was not going to allow my Sunday, because you always have the turds in the punch bowl that are the pro Hamas stands. And I was not in a mood and I was not going to be tempted on the Lord's day to deal with all those people who are evil. So I just disabled the comments and everybody can kiss my backside because I don't feel no bad about it at all. No, I was not allowing anybody to have any of my time or energy, nor your time or energy. But it's just amazing that that kind of hate exists still. And I was thinking, too, I believe in a quiet culpability. You know, to counter what Barack Obama was saying, because hell no, we are not complicit in all that. Maybe you are, dude, because you were pushing the empowerment of Iran. So I do believe Barack Obama is culpable for October 7th because he empowered Iran. Nobody wants to say stuff like this. Everybody wants to just be like, well, no. There's a quiet complicity in this. That's his part. There's also a quiet culpability of all the people who, if they see stuff. The other thing that got me was when, you know, that kind of stuff was happening in the square. I mean, there was a guy was at the stop sign and was doing this. And I'm not saying I believe in violence, and I mean, I do in self-defense. I'm not saying that I believe in, you know, being aggressive, but I also, you have to understand, I'm from Southern Missouri, okay? So we kind of took care of our own and we didn't allow that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have that mentality. And you got to understand, when you are raised in a certain mindset, you just feel like, you know, you're going to be the bouncer for everybody and you're going to kind of keep the peace. You know what I'm saying? People who grew up that way get me, and I don't have to explain it. Y'all understand? Like, how there's a quiet culpability in not saying anything. See, where I grew up, having someone come up to you and saying that you don't have a right to exist, that's going to get your ass kicked. And ain't nobody going to help you out of it. Today, everyone's like, oh, let's not rock the boat. No, I think we need to bring back the ladder. Because that worked. And if some people won't logically choose to not be crazy, maybe they should have it slapped out of them. I don't know. That's just my two cents on it. But there's a quiet complicity in not saying anything. We have more to come as we roll towards Florida Man. Save us, Florida Man.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Oh, man, alive. Now, we love our Florida men. This guy, though, you can't be doing this stuff. Sheriff says that a Florida man was tased and arrested because he got drunk in Marathon, Florida, and just decided to go all Wild West and follow Joe Biden's advice and shoot his gun randomly in the air. You can't do that. Robert Phillips of Punta Gorda faces charges of discharging a weapon in public. He was in the commission of a felony, using his gun while he was drunk as a skunk. Then he tried to resist arrest, fleeing, eluding, assault, DUI. So he added a whole bunch of charges up on his name. He was riding a bicycle in the area. Deputies asked him to stop. He didn't do it. So they, like, why? You're riding a bike. Just get off your bike. But then they tased him. He continued to resist arrest. They found a 40 cal in his possession. And then a witness said that he was threatening to kill people. A second witness said they saw him just shooting it up in the air multiple times. You can't be doing that. They did find shell casings, all kinds of stuff. This guy, and then he kept saying he was drunk, so that's why he's doing it. Yeah, that's not an excuse. Not at all. And this is one way to make sure you get super arrested. An Orlando man was accused of ramming a stolen car into a police vehicle. Yes, you heard that correctly. A stolen car rammed it into a police vehicle. Cela White now faces multiple charges. He's in custody. Third hour on the way. I have one of the best jokes ever to tell you. And we got to figure out this men's bathroom situation. Stick with us.
And where do we stand with the negotiations to get hostages freed by Hamas?
Those negotiations are going on quietly behind the scenes. They have taken longer than any of us would like. But we continue to believe that there is the possibility of getting a significant number of these hostages released. And you've heard both President Biden and the Prime Minister of Israel say that there could be a pause in the fighting to enable that, the way there was when two American hostages were released very early in the conflict. And we're going to continue to work on that as well.
Good heavens. So welcome back to the program. It was a very interesting soundbite here from the deputy NSA John Finer, who says, yes, Hamas negotiations happening quietly behind the scenes. And we think that there's going to be a possibility of freeing citizens. Think that there's a possibility of freeing citizens? The hell kind of statement is that? That doesn't really inspire a lot of confidence, right? You're not going to, when the hell, why are we negotiating with terrorists again? We negotiated with the Taliban. We negotiated with terrorists in Afghanistan. We negotiated with terrorists, I mean, basically terrorists in Qatar. I mean, come on. Why are we negotiating with terrorists? Just give us our people back or we're going to murder all of you. We're going to, not murder, we're going to kill all of you righteously, Hamas. We are going to turn you into ash. We're going to go Les Grossman on you. We are going to blank you up. Just give us our people back. Good grief. Yes, well, we think there's a possibility. What kind of messaging is this from the administration? This, they're a mess. They are an absolute mess. Now, there's a possibility. Possibility. So, a couple of things here. I was reading this tweet from Phil Williams, who is a reporter in Nashville with their Channel 5 there in Nashville. Because, you know, earlier, as we talked about some of the pages from the Covenant Killers manifesto were leaked because the police won't release it. They won't release the manifesto. And the reason they said as to why they wouldn't release the manifesto is because FOIA requests and people were getting legal trying to make them abide by what they're supposed to do and be transparent and release the manifesto. And so they literally used that as a way to say, well, we can't per, you know, pending a litigation per our policy, we can't release stuff that's involved in that in such litigation. So we can't release it. Well, the three pages, and I only read it once. It was horrible. It says, you know, they're going to kill all the. She said she wanted to be a dude. She was going to kill all the kids there. She hoped she had a high body count, all this stuff. So Phil Williams tweets, quote, multiple sources have told me that the selective leak of three pages of the Covenant school shooting manifesto is extremely misleading. People who have read the whole thing say there's something in there for everybody. Another, she hated everyone. How in the world, Phil, does this in any way mislead anyone about her motive? I mean, that's a pretty wild take to say that it is misleadingly selective because only three pages of her tirade was released and that there are more crazy pages. That is, I can't believe you went with that. That's what you went with. Really? How is that misleading? I mean, there's more murderous rage that she wrote about in her notebook. But it's very misleading to select a selective leak. It doesn't say a selective leak. What the hell does that mean? That because these pages were released and not other pages of her murderous ramblings, that somehow takes away from the seriousness of this, these three? Really? What an asinine hot take. This is why people don't like the media. So I love the, well, there was something for everyone. Maybe she hated everyone, but she didn't target everyone. She targeted a Catholic school. She targeted children. So you can't say that there was something in it for everyone when she didn't go after everyone, Phil. She went after a damn school in Nashville. She went after students there. Stop trying to excuse this stuff, you culpable asshats. I'm so tired of this. Fancy private schools. Asinine. She hated everyone. Oh, but she targeted the school. Can I tell you guys a joke? Mm-hmm. It's worth it. I got it from my friend Taryn Butler. So the joke goes like this. There were four passengers on a plane. The plane was about to crash. Four passengers on a plane. Plane's about to crash, and there are only three parachutes. So the first passenger steps up, says, I'm Lionel Messi. You know, I'm a super famous soccer or football player, depending. I've got, you know, young kids. I have a wife. I have, you know, a lot of life ahead of me. I have millions of fans. I'm not going to die on this plane. And he grabs a parachute and jumps out and parachutes to safety. The next passenger on the plane is President Joe Biden. And he says, look, I'm president of the United States of America. You know, I'm a millions of people don't want me to die on this plane. You know, I was I got to go and do whatever the hell it is I do in D.C. I'm not going to die on this plane. He grabs one of the packs and jumps out of the plane and goes on. The third passenger is the Pope. Now, I don't know if this joke was written at the time of this Pope or the previous Pope, but we'll just go with it. And the Pope looks at the fourth passenger, which is a 10-year-old kid, tells the kid, look, I'm old. I've lived my life. You take this parachute and you go and live your life. You have a whole future ahead of you. You know, trust in the Lord. And the 10-year-old kid looks at the Pope and says, no, there's a parachute for you. The smartest president in the world, Joe Biden, took my backpack. So there's a parachute for you, too.
Waste him a good backpack.
Yeah, I mean, perfectly good backpack, man. Took all his homework and everything. So there's your joke. We got that for you. So I wanted to bring up, because we got all kinds of serious stuff. We've been talking about some of this with, I've got some pieces up on the newsletter. Over at Substack for your subscribers about all the stuff with the Trump legal battle and all that. I wanted to get into some of this border issues as well. Five Democrat mayors are pleading with Biden for help with asylum seekers being brought into the city, into their cities. But you were a sanctuary city. You proudly broadcast that you were a sanctuary city. Now you're mad because you're being treated as a sanctuary city. Wow, it's almost like there are repercussions for saying that you will abide by criminality. That you'll allow it. They had Chicago's mayor, Los Angeles's mayor, Denver's mayor, New York's mayor, and Houston's mayor. All their mayors sign on to this. Karen Bass, Brandon Johnson, Mike Johnston, Sylvester Turner, and Eric Adams. Every one of these cats had said that theirs was a sanctuary city. Now they're saying, please, Mr. Biden, can you please stop it? We need to stop bringing the asylum seekers to our cities. Now they're begging for help. Okay, so here's the other question we were debating. Because I said this, and you probably were like, what? Being a woman, I don't go in the men's bathrooms, right? So I don't know what y'all do in there. I'm glad I don't. I mean, I don't like public restrooms anyway because they're all weird. Especially nowadays, because you can have, it's ma'am, who like rolls up in a bathroom anymore. I mean, good grief. I did not know that all you dudes had a urinal rule. I did not know this. I saw a meme that's going around. The rule is basically if you have a wall of urinals, they all don't get used. They will all never be used at the same time.
Well, that is not necessarily
no.
100%, but mostly true.
Like if the fate of humanity depended on all of them being used at once and you all had to use and you couldn't wait, then yes. But I don't. The rule, as I have been told, and I did not believe you guys about this. I thought that it was coming from dramatic people, including members of my own family. I did not know that it is like an actual thing. So if there's like, say, four urinals in a row on a wall, only two of them are allowed to be used at once, basically. Correct?
Well, it depends. How many urinals are against the wall?
I just said four.
Well, then even number would mean you want to choose the one at the very end or the one end or the other so that there's at least one or two options for somebody coming in behind you.
Yeah, but are you telling me that if there's four urinals in a row, four,
yeah,
and you have one person who comes and uses this one and then a person on one end and one person uses the one on the other end, the two in the middle.
That's a tough one.
What happens?
Well, usually,
does someone wait?
There's usually an.
Why is that difficult? I'm trying to understand this. Why is that difficult?
Well, it's not difficult. It's if it's the only one available, you got to go. You're going to use it. But the first choice is like, for example, if there are five urinals against the wall, you're going to choose if they're all unoccupied. As a guy, you walk in, you're going to choose one on the very end.
You just added a urinal.
You're not. I know, but the point is, you don't want to put yourself in the middle one.
You don't want to roll up next to a homie.
The second
one. Be like,
one. Hey. Or that.
It's not like a parking lot is what you're saying. Either. I mean, you got to leave space because no.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is.
So glad I'm not a dude.
Yeah. if it's malfunctioning too, or if it's dirty or whatever, you're going
to
leave
it alone.
I'm
told that you all will wait.
Yeah, we'll wait.
You will literally wait so you don't stand next to someone at an empty urinal right next to somebody
else. That's not 100% true.
Steve, is that true? I don't mean to like pry into y'all's business, but I'm fascinated. I did not know any of this. I am this years old and I did not know.
Kane is right for the most part. Yeah. All his logic checks out.
Your logic checks out, Kane.
I'm happy to hear that. But yeah, so if you're in the fifth one, like you're in the...
Well, then why do they make the bathrooms like this?
What do you mean?
Well, then why don't they like put up dividers? If this is universally known throughout Mandom.
Mandom.
Mandom has rules.
Not interested in that word.
No. You know what I mean? Like in the Miniverse.
Okay.
If this is universally known throughout the Miniverse, then right. Why don't they help brothers out and put some stalls up between your urinals?
Some do, but in like sporting events and sporting
they treat y'all like a cattle call?
Arenas and stadiums, there are no dividers for the most part.
So glad I'm a girl.
In the old days, do you remember the old Busch Stadium?
Yeah.
You just lay it all out around a trough.
I did not need to know that.
Yeah.
So glad I'm a girl.
How it goes.
See, I feel like you guys, I feel like the Miniverse is a little bit more courteous to each other than the Womeniverse.
You're probably right, based on things I've heard from you.
Because like ladies will go into stalls and they don't tell a girl if you're out of squares.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. If you ever saw Seinfeld, can you spare a square? They don't help people out. Like I will come to the aid. I will be like, don't go here or don't go here. This is why I don't like, I rarely ever do this because I really go to, I hate public restrooms. Everything's gross. That's where my germophobia has not ended. Yeah. But I did not know that there was a whole rule about this with the urinals. So like if somebody comes up next, is it sus if you're at a urinal and there's all these empty ones and someone comes stands up right next to you? Is that a big no-no?
Yes.
Yeah. If there are like three or four.
Steve jumped in on that. Do you hear how fast he jumped in on that? He's like, yes.
It is a no-no. If there are five against the wall, you're at one at the end and he comes and stands next to you. Yeah, that's no. No. You don't do that. You go to the one that's one away from you at minimum.
It's like a courtesy.
Right,
like
as a courtesy. Right, that's all it is. I mean, if they're all available and open, why the heck you come and standing next to me for?
If there's an empty row, do you have courtesy in your mind when you choose?
Yeah.
Really? So like, you'll
so
say,
I'll
like,
choose
I'll
the one
space?
At the very end so that the other four, there he has three choices at that point, the next person walking in. Three. There's no need to stand next to me.
I had no idea about this. I love the rules in Miniverse. I just think that you guys are a little more courteous than women.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So say you're all are weighing in. The Miniverse is speaking about the urinal thing. It is a true rule. They did say, apparently, one of our friends on social said that there is the exception at football games. Right, at sports events. Okay, so that, because I was like, that, I don't know how that's like, how that works. Anyway, you guys are funny. Milk carton shortage has hit lunchrooms in California and New York and some other states, according to the USDA. By the way, milk tastes better out of a carton, doesn't it? Like the little carton, like in school. There's something about that glue and cardboard that's delicious. The tiny half-pint cartons of milk served with millions of school lunches across the country could be scarce in some cafeterias. Some districts are scrambling to find alternatives. It's not that there's a shortage of milk, but a shortage of cardboard cartons used to pack it. Kane, I'm sensing a business opportunity. The leading manufacturer of beverage packaging in North America is Pactiv Evergreen in Lake Forest, Illinois. And they said that, yes, they're facing significantly higher than projected demand for milk cartons. And they said that it's affecting their ability to actually provide fully supply some school milk orders. I didn't know that was like a big thing. Who knew that was ever going to be a problem? Let's see. A New Hampshire man attacked three with a box cutter at a Manchester auto auction. In St. Louis, students took to the streets to protest proposed, and this is like literally down the street from my old house, to propose Soulard dispensaries. They say that kids are protesting, well, and good for them. It's they don't want a marijuana dispensary right across the street from their school in South City. It's the Kind Goods recreational dispensary. They pulled their plans for a drive-through window as a show of good faith from the school. But the multiple students told Channel 5 there that they want it stopped altogether. Yeah, it shouldn't be across from a school. That's ridiculous. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. That's ridiculous. And I think there's enough drugs in Soulard. Sorry. There is. Stick with us. Stephen Yates coming up.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Welcome back to the program. You can listen coast to coast on a station terrestrially near you. You can stream the radio program. You can also watch the live stream as well, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. There's nothing happening in the world with foreign policy. Absolutely nothing. Everything's fine. What? Kittens and sunshine. It's all great, Kane. What? Nobody needs it. It's fine, you know? I mean, we didn't even know what our very good friend Stephen Yates would even need to talk about. And you can find him on Twitter at YatesComs. He's such a good guy. We've talked to him. We've known Stephen for I don't know how many years now. Senior fellow at America First Policy Institute, chair of the China Policy Initiative as well. And we had a handful of people, more than a handful of people, that had reached out. Every time he is not with us during any week, people are like, because they know that China does not like him. And he's been very critical of the CCP. But they always reach out and they always chime in on anything that you have to say, my friend. And they noticed your absence. And I just wanted to say for those who are watching, your family experienced a tragic loss. You're a beautiful daughter. And we've been praying for you and praying for your family. We were praying for your daughter as well. Yesterday was her birthday, I know. Yes. And she's just beautiful. As a parent, I can't. No parent wants to be there. It is a very, very. It's a very horrible club to be in. But we love you, my friend, and we've been just sending every prayer and good vibe your way. And so I just wanted to tell you that before we dive into the nitty gritty, and so our audience knows, because we had a lot of people asking about you.
I'm deeply, deeply grateful for it. It's obviously an awful journey to have to go through. And I am still processing it all. And I'm just grateful that people have noticed and cared. We'll have a lot to say about what brought my daughter to her end. I mean, she had a long struggle with mental health and addiction. She was born out of incredibly difficult circumstances, came to us by the miracle of adoption. She was mixed race, had questions of identity from being adopted to being a quarter Native American, quarter African American, and half Irish. And I don't know which part made it harder for her, but probably having me as a dad was a burden that she had to carry. But we loved each other all the way through, lots of crazy stuff. But the punchline is that as we've talked, I firmly believe that fentanyl and all who traffic in it and enable it are the greatest threat and WMD against the American family in the history of our republic. That's what took oxygen from my daughter's brain and took her from us. And that's how we've been spending the last 2 weeks, was untangling a long journey through brain death, ICU, hospice, a long goodbye, and still untangling some of the details. There's some blessings and tender moments in all of that. I have not been this put together in a conversation for 2 weeks. But I just want to thank you, Dana, and your audience for giving me the grace and the prayers and the friendship.
Of course. Of course. And I can't imagine, we can't imagine him not being ever put together. I just have to say, when he seems like, you seem like the guy that you want in your trench when something goes sideways.
I'm pretty good at fighting for other people. When you have to fight for yourself, it's just a whole nother ball game.
It takes it's a very different perspective. And you go through a journey where you learn phrases and words that relate to well-being, someone's well-being that you never thought you'd have to learn, phrases and time periods and all of this stuff. And it's heartbreaking. And you mentioned fentanyl and, you know, what's being trafficked in at the southern border and, of course, at the backing of China. Where all of the elements are created and all of this comes together. And I don't think anybody, to your point, Stephen, there is not a single family that is unaffected by this.
Right.
I mean, in my own family, I've had relatives that have dealt with this situation. I mean, Kane and I both, I mean, everybody, that's how prevalent this is.
Well, and the way it is distributed now just multiplies that risk. So think of how expensive healthcare can be and prescription drugs can be, and how many people think that they have some problem with ADHD or anxiety. I mean, we have a generation of kids where, you know, when I was growing up, you were basically just sent out and toughen up and don't complain or whatever it was. I'm sure we did complain. We weren't perfect kids. But we have a generation of kids that have grown up in a completely different universe. Social media amplifies all of this in all of the worst ways. And one of the primary means of delivery is laced Xanax or other laced prescription that's off market. So it's no one's going and getting a straight shot of fentanyl. That would kill 12,000 elephants at once. So you got this dastardly business of the precursors coming into China. You have them money laundering and collaborating with the cartels. We have the unforgivable policy on the border, but we also have this culture that's getting torn apart. And what I've tried to share with friends is that, you know, Christina came to us by way of adoption. And when I travel the world, most governments and friends in other countries, they don't even understand this concept of taking a child that comes from someone else, that doesn't look like you, bringing that child in and loving that child as your own. And then you knew that there were problems. Her birth mother had cocaine and alcohol in her system in utero through her pregnancy. We knew there were going to be issues. To me, this is a uniquely American greatness. And I'm not talking about me. I'm just talking about the thousands and thousands of other families that go through all of this, and people in other countries can't even understand it. It just makes it all the more evil that a country that had a one-child policy is extremely racist about what constitutes a citizen and who belongs, is putting this kind of insidious chemical in. This is, to me, just past a policy debate. We have to protect the American family first. We have to honor and protect fatherhood and motherhood and people who step out onto this thin ice to take in children who are at risk. These lives matter. If you're an ounce of pro-life, you have to be a pound of love and support for the people who all they wanted was a kid. They had no idea what they were going to do to address mental health and addiction. And that is a whole bucking bronco that, unless you've lived it with a loved one, you can't know. But then you add the fentanyl on top of it. And yes, we are there. I think this dwarfs COVID as a pandemic. Frankly, even though it traumatized me and it shaped my life, it dwarfs 9/11 as an attack on America and American civilization. It is terrorism, and it's tearing us apart. While I don't like that I have solace in others who have walked this walk, I feel a little less alone with a lot of friends, some very prominent and famous people who have not publicly shared what they've gone through. But to your point, so many people, even of means or poor, it doesn't discriminate. And so to me, this is a life commitment. It's a blood oath that I'll do everything possible in the culture wars from the grassroots up to fight this scourge. And if there's any country, any foreign influence that wants to step on this turf, I don't want wars. But you start killing our children and killing our families and our communities, and enough has to be enough.
I think, and we're talking with Stephen Yates, and you can find him on Twitter at YatesComs or on X at YatesComs. You made, I think, one of the best perspective shaping arguments for this, and in terms of the watch for this and the awareness of it and how it needs to be dealt with, because it is one of the only things that's not directly, it's not targeted against an ethnicity or against a sex or against a religion. It is targeted against everyone. And if people think, to your point, that you, the CCP and these other bad players in the world are not looking at how to exploit every single thing and attack, you know, Western civilization and the leader of it, the United States, from every angle that they can, particularly this one, which is so prevalent in so many families across the country. I mean, this is it. And it is, I think, really sobering for a lot of people to realize that one of the things that they have paid the least to is the greatest attack of them all.
Right. Well, I mean, think of the only institutions that can overcome this are going to be institutions of faith, the power of an almighty, the traditional family, whether you like it or not. And I am for anybody, love is love, whatever you want to say. I'm just saying if you're there as a parent to love and care for a kid, I want to be there for you to help you love and care for that kid. And everything, and even trying to tear apart what is America. America is beautiful. America is a blessed place. America is what made this journey with my beautiful, wild lightning bolt of Christina possible. It doesn't happen in other places. We adopt people from all over the world to come into our homes and accept them as our own, as our family, the most beloved in our whole lives. And we need to do more of that for the children in our own country. And so there's everything from foster but church communities. I mean, we have to stop the attack on communities of faith that are the healing and nurturing infrastructure. I mean, you can't have put someone in a place like I've been for the last 5 years, and especially the last 2 weeks, where the only backstop is a faceless bureaucrat in government. Mm. That is cruel and unusual punishment. And America wasn't built that way. It didn't have to be that way. I think wrong thinking, woke agenda, and all of that is targeting this very, very problem. One of the last things on just this journey that no parent wants to have to go through, when your child meets his or her end, all of a sudden you have to fill out a questionnaire about, was your child black, white, Hispanic, something else? And there's no forgiveness in it. My daughter was a quarter Native American, a quarter black, half Irish, who knows whatever else was in there. But what she really was is she was a Yates. She was a person. She was an American. That's what she was. That's what's supposed to be our identity. And that's what's so insidious. But our only road back to care for the injured in all this process is to get back to those healing institutions and being what we're really supposed to be. So that's my sermon for today on how to try to take an absolute gut punch like this. I have a son who is trying to hold himself up going through all this, has his own questions about why God would do these kinds of things or not intervene. These are the, you know, the kind of questions that we are here as parents to try to deal with. But I hope that by sharing some of this stuff, number one, I want everyone to take very, very seriously. You need to get your kids to have advanced directives, because they'll grow up and they'll go do stupid stuff. You don't want to be stuck having to fight legal things mm-hmm. when you're dealing with all of this kind of situation. But also, just know, if there's someone who's saying they're having a tough walk with mental health, that's not a joke anymore. We've got to find a better way to deal with it. I don't think government's the solution, but we as a culture have to find a way to fix a lot of these things. But the pieces that will pull this back together is just like what they tell you in AANA or any other part of life. There's only one power in this universe that has the power to overcome this. We have to stop denying that power.
Amen to that. Our good friend Stephen Yates, who I think you go through such a personal tragedy and it becomes such a powerful tool of witness. I think better than anybody has in this entire conversation laid out just how dangerous identity politics is, number one, and number two, why people, your daughter being a Yates and yeah. all of the things, that's why people come to America. You can be, as I said, you can be from, you can't go to Italy and be Italian, you can't go to France and be French, but you can come to the United States and be American because of that unbelievable animated spirit of liberty, that trait, which is what statism targets.
Absolutely, 100%.
That's our unity. We're praying for you. I just want to tell you how much we appreciate you. I think that you have the most reasoned take on foreign policy out there, and you have blessed us by being on this program with us for so many years now. And I want to tell everyone, Stephen does this of his own time because we're not a big high flying operation. We keep everything tight and controlled so that we can do what we do and not have to answer to people. And Stephen has been so gracious with his time and his talent. And I just want to say that you've blessed us over the years with that. And we are so grateful for you. And we're grateful for your family. And we're grateful that you're sharing, I know, the hardest fight of your life. And hopefully that sticks in people's minds and that becomes good. And that's the legacy. So thank you so much, my friend. God love you. We're praying for you and we're here for you. We'll talk off air too. Thank you, my friend.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dana. Much appreciated.
Thank you. You can find him at Yates Comms. On X, and you can also find America First Policy Institute at A1 Policy. Really quickly, what he just said about your kids' advanced directive, before you send your kids off to college, make sure that they do that. Before either of my kids went off to college, we had them fill out power of attorney and all of that stuff so that if anything ever happened, we would never have to go through that. We would never have to fight to make sure that they, if anything, heaven forbid, happened. So make sure if you haven't done it and you got kids that are home for Thanksgiving or whatever, get that taken care of. It's very quick. It's very easy to do, but it is incredibly important. It can take minutes now and save you a lot of time later on if, heaven forbid, the worst happens.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. A lot of good stuff comes out of that regularly. Lorraine has a great piece getting into all of the Trump New York stuff that's happening currently. And the other thing we're kind of watching, I have a conspiracy theory about Gavin Newsom and Joe Biden, because the polling for Joe Biden is bad. Nobody likes him. What does this mean? We're going to dive into that tomorrow. Today in Stupidity, Kane.
Speaking of Joe Biden.
Your favorite person.
Yeah, here he is today. He was talking to a group of folks. This was about investing in America. Listen to what he says here. Maybe you can figure it out.
Convinced President Ladd when I was vice president. I convinced the president to do. Provide money for high-speed rail.
Days after day, days in a row. So confused by this guy.
I am all confused. That does it for us today, folks. I will be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Find us on Facebook, YouTube, like, and subscribe. Have a great night. Back with you then.